Our first lesson is from the prophecy of Isaiah, chapter 35. The wilderness and the dry land shall be glad. The desert shall rejoice and blossom. Like the crocus, it shall blossom abundantly and rejoice with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given to it, the majesty of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord, the majesty of our God. Strengthen the weak hands and make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who are of a fearful heart, be strong, do not fear. Here is your God. He will come with vengeance and terrible recompense. He will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then the lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the speechless sing for joy. For waters shall break forth in the wilderness, and streams in the desert. The burning sand shall become a pool, and the thirsty ground springs of water. The haunt of jackals shall become a swamp. The grass shall become reeds and rushes. A highway shall be there, and it shall be called the Holy Way. The unclean shall not travel on it, but it shall be for God's people. No traveler, not even fools, shall go astray. No lion shall be there, nor shall any ravenous beast come up on it. They shall not be found there, but the redeemed shall walk there. And the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with singing. Everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness. For sorrow and sighing shall flee away.
From the Gospel of Matthew. When John heard in prison what the Messiah was doing, he sent word by his disciples and said to him, "Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another?" Jesus answered them, "Go tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have good news brought to them. And blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me." As they went away, Jesus began to speak to the crowds about John. "What did you go out into the wilderness to look at? A reed shaken by the wind? What then did you go out to see? Someone dressed in soft robes? Look, those who wear soft robes are in royal palaces. What then did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, I tell you, and more than a prophet. This is the one about whom it is written, 'See, I am sending my messenger ahead of you who will prepare your way before you.' Truly, I tell you, among those born of women, no one has arisen greater than John the Baptist. Yet the least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he." The word of the Lord. On a regular basis, I am grateful for the GPS on my phone and the one we have in our newer car. As a relative newcomer to the area, I don't know how I would have gotten around without the global positioning system, especially navigating these windy roads in this area at night. The neighborhood lanes are dark. Many of the street signs are impossible to see. And I learned early on there is a threat of a deer leaping across the road beyond any number of wooded curves. On more than one occasion, I have been driving 40 miles an hour down some dark and winding road with a deer crossing sign every 100 yards, and I have to admit, I thank God that we were able to teach our teenage boys how to drive in a neighborhood laid out on a grid in Columbia, South Carolina, with a four-way stop sign every two blocks. You cannot work up any speed in a place like that, and you have to leave town to spot the deer. Besides, how many roads around here have the word golf in them? And from city line westward, every little town along the way has a Bryn Mawr Avenue that, as far as I can tell, is not connected to another Bryn Mawr Avenue, and none of them seem to lead to Bryn Mawr. So whenever I'm trying to find a new place, I am more than grateful to enter the address and wait for some nice voice to tell me where to turn. But there is also, as you well know, a downside to using a GPS. It does not take much familiarity with a place to recognize that the satellites orbiting the Earth above us have a preference for the main arteries, the big roads, the highways. Just this past week, on two occasions, I was heading to Holmes, just a matter of miles from here, between Wayne and Devon, and the GPS said that I should go all the way to the interstate, west of my destination, and then back to it. Someone ought to send a message to those satellites up there and explain it would be more helpful if the GPS were better acquainted with the back roads. Here's another thing the GPS would never understand, and that we often forget. God hardly ever sends us down the main roads or the interstate highways to get where we need to go on this journey of faith and this journey of life. God always uses the back roads, the unexpected detours, the byways, where we should be especially attentive to the natural world around us, the creatures that might leap out in front of us, the wildflowers in bloom, the signs in creation that point to something so much grander than any destination that we might have in mind. Here we are, after all, in the last couple of weeks before the winter solstice. The days are getting shorter, the nights are getting longer, a cold front has moved in so that our breath hangs in the air. And God is speaking to us this Advent morning about a desert in bloom. The wilderness and the dry land shall be glad. The desert shall rejoice and blossom. A highway will be there, and it shall be called the Holy Way. The ransomed of the Lord shall return. Everlasting joy will be upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. Through a highway in the desert, the prophet Isaiah proclaims, God will come and save us, and it will be called the Holy Way. The word holy derives from the same root as two words, whole and health. Holiness sets things apart as places where the transcendent ways of God, which make things whole and healthy, have infiltrated our mundane, ordinary things of life. The season of the year is so filled with incongruent images of things that we would normally not put together that we forget these old familiar ways of God were set apart from normal expectations. Think about it. A desert in full bloom. A wolf lying down with a lamb. shepherds keeping watch over their flock by night. A child wrapped in bands of cloth and lying in a manger. A word become flesh. Light shining in darkness. That is the nature of holiness. Our ordinary, mundane, earthly world pervaded and infused with the divine presence of God. And God's holy ways are intended to rub off on us. Holiness in believers is the result of their being united with Christ, wrote the old English Baptist Abraham Booth back in the 18th century. Holiness in believers is the result of their being united with Christ, and the Spirit uses the Bible to influence believers to produce holiness in heart and life. Now, in the hustle and bustle of preparing for Christmas, if we ever wonder or worry that we may have lost touch with the holiness God intends for us through our union with Christ, take comfort, for we are not alone. John the Baptist lost sight of God's holy way, revealed in Jesus, too. If there were anyone who had appeared to be certain about who Jesus was and when he was coming, it was John the Baptist. Every single one of the Gospels begins with John absolutely certain that what he says about the Messiah will come true. Someone is coming who is more powerful than I, he shouts out in the wilderness. I baptize you with water, but he will baptize you with Holy Spirit and fire. Every word out of John's mouth sounds unconditional, resolute, and steadfast. And just as John promises, Jesus comes to the Jordan to be baptized, and the heavens declare him beloved child of God. Then as soon as Jesus shows up, John disappears. It is as if once the curtain lifts to reveal Jesus on center stage, the bright spotlight on John shuts off. It's not until John's ministry is well underway that until Jesus' ministry is well underway that we meet up with John again, deep in the shadows this time. The uncompromising prophet is in prison. And prison seems to have done to him what it often does to others. It breaks him down. His once sure declaration has given way to an aching question. Are you the one to come? Or are we to wait for another? Are you the one to come? Or are we to wait for another? That is sometimes our question too, isn't it? Is Jesus the one we're looking for? And if he is, why does he seem so elusive? Is his coming kingdom ever going to really come and transform this old weary world of ours? These are important questions of faith, which I believe, if we take them seriously, can help us find the back road that Isaiah maps out for us, which is called the Holy Way. Probably best known for her book, The Secret Life of Bees, which became a movie, Sue Monk Kidd has also written a lot about her faith. One of her books remembers a time when she reached a long season of what she describes as religious burnout. She had been going through the motions of being religious, going to church, talking some about what she believed with friends, thinking about how her faith manifested itself in what she did and how she acted. For all her conscious trying to be religious, she found herself nonetheless starving. So she went off to a quiet place for a contemplative retreat where in prayer and solitude she had an extraordinary encounter with God. But then she writes, she came home to work and bills to pay and phone calls to children and grocery shopping. In a word, she came home to plain old life. Here in the noise of life, she writes, there was mostly God's supreme absence. So on a Monday morning, she drove to her church where the custodian kindly let her in and reminded her that worship had been the day before. She sat in the sanctuary all alone trying to wrestle God into being more present for her. Then she realized she had in her mind limited God's presence to what she perceived as sacred, to holy places and church-sponsored moments, and in so doing had separated common things from spiritual things. She had separated her routine moments from holy moments. Then she heard the custodian turn on a distant vacuum cleaner. And suddenly it became very clear to her. She writes, God, I realized, is not partial to stained glass. She made herself leave the church for the world. She picked up one of her children, drove downtown, and took a seat on a park bench while her son played on one of those old cannons in front of the courthouse. She noticed people lined up at the bus stop and an old woman with a sweater tied around her head. She writes, in that ordinary, mundane slice of life, sitting there enveloped by bus fumes and traffic sounds, I remember being nearly knocked breathless by the love I felt welling up in me for that lady with the sweater on her head. She realized God was in the fume-laden air and the sun slanting off the courthouse roof and the groan of the bus and the old woman. She goes on, it was as if a veil slipped off my illusions and I saw what is God's life breaking in to the here and the now. Friends, it is possible to have deep encounters with God in the midst of life, perhaps even more possible than in what we have come to call sacred, because that is where God comes, in the earth, the grit and the dirt of it, from the desert sand to the high mountain, in the city streets and wherever your ordinary days take you, in the illness of those you love and the worry about the things that keep you up at night, God comes and weaves through our mundane, ordinary days a holy way. When Isaiah proclaims the coming of God, he points to the natural world and to the broken human family inhabiting it, saying, God is coming here. And when John the Baptist asks his honest question of Jesus, are you the one to come or are we to look for another? Remember what Jesus said in response. Jesus hearkens back to Isaiah saying, go tell John what you see and hear. The lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have good news brought to them. The holiness of God is found as the world turns from a wasteland of despair to a desert that blooms. From a humanity on the edge of peril to one that leaps for joy. From mundane ordinary moments. Today's illumined by the transformative power of God. The holiness of God is found in our union with Christ and in the holiness we produce in heart and life. Amen.